boxing reporter and analyst for BBC Five Live. Steve Bunce joins us on Writer's Block. Steve, great of you to do this. Thanks so much. So with Mr. Brunt and myself were talking about this before we took our break, but I'll just ask you, is there any doubt in your mind, because there are a lot of people obviously want to see an Anthony Joshua Tyson Fury fight, especially in the UK, that there will be the Deontay Wilder rematch first, will there not?
Yeah, good evening, fellas, or good afternoon, whatever it is with you guys at the moment. You're guaranteed there's a rematch. Wilder said yes. He's triggered the rematch clause, 60-40, in Tyson Fury's favour. He had 30 days to do so. He managed to do so after just 2 full days. He emerged from somewhere, obviously, finally managed to get clear of that ridiculous outfit he wore to the ring. He has triggered the rematch. There will be a rematch, and the football stadium is at the moment has the inside track on the venue, simply because the owner of the new Raiders, whose name escapes me, he was at not one, not two, but all of Tyson Fury's fights last year. He's been at the last 3 fights: Central, Prime, very close to Bob Arum. Bob Arum is Las Vegas boxing. The owner seems to know Bob Arum, as far as I can tell. That third fight will be there. The debate about whether we need a third fight, debate about whether we can sell 76,000 tickets, that will happen afterwards. I've got to tell you, should I tell you the truth?
Yes.
I've been going to Las Vegas over 60 times. And over the last 10 years, we've been paying for that stadium. There's been a build-out stadium tax, which is the biggest piece of fleecing, the biggest piece of larceny in Las Vegas history.
Yes.
You don't mind me saying so, because you can't buy a ticket until about 2020, 2097. I mean, quite seriously, every single person I know would have been dead for 50 years by the time they buy a ticket. That stadium will sell out for a boxing event. All they need to do, they can put in the ring one of Muhammad Ali's left boots, and there'd still be 76,000 people in there. It's a simple fact.
I don't know where to go from that, Steve. That's awesome. But Mark Davis is the guy you're talking about, owner of the Raiders, Al Davis's son.
Yeah, that's
the guy with that bad haircut. Yeah, he was at ringside. Hey, Steve, the first fight was very different than this fight. And the first fight's kind of what you would, we probably all would have expected in some ways going in. You know, guy who's got a huge reputation as a puncher and Wilder. Guy who's got a lot of skill as a boxer, really, smart fighter like Tyson Fury, the boxer versus puncher. But, this fight, completely different. Although, I got to say, Tyson Fury did exactly what he said he was going to do. Did you believe him, though, man?
No, of course I did. And I was filled with him privately, and I was with him all week. I tipped him to win. I thought there was a chance he might wear Wilder down after a really tight, hard fight, probably where he'd have to get up from the canvas. That was my so-called expert tip. I had no idea. And anybody other than Tyson Fury's father and Tyson Fury, who tells you that they knew he'd win every second of every round, finish it like he did, and at the same time drop Wilder twice, once with a body punch. We reckon only the second time in heavyweight history, championship history, a fighter's gone down from a body shot. Anybody that tells you that that's what they thought, well, I tell you what, ask them for the lottery ticket numbers next time, because they're fibbing about that as well. No one except for Tyson and his inner circle saw a fight that easy and then carried out the plan. It was stunning.
Yeah, it was stunning. It was brilliant. It took some guts, to walk right out of puncher. But boy,
absolutely big risk.
But he exposed him, Steve. One thing we do know about Wilder is that, obviously, a great puncher, although people were skeptical about some of his early wins. There's people who said some of those were setups even, but I believe it. Good, crazy great right hand. But, he's got terrible feet. He's not good technically. He loses a lot. He lost a lot of rounds before he knocked guys out because he got outboxed.
Yeah.
So, what we hadn't seen, though, was somebody really take a fight to him and force him to work backwards and force him to use his feet and defend, and it's not quite Buster Douglas Tyson, but there's some similarities, taking it to that guy and making him do something he's not comfortable with.
Absolutely, there are similarities. And I'll tell you now, and I've seen Wilder fight a lot, and I've studied Wilder a lot, and I've done a lot of, big fights where he's been involved. And he has never lost a round that he tried to win. So when he lost those rounds to Ortiz in both the fights, when he's lost other rounds against a guy called Arthur Spilska, when he loses those rounds, he's losing them intentionally. He's not bothered. He's thinking about something. He's not trying to win. And I can assure you that even in the seventh and final round, even though he was way off of all his punches, he was still trying to win. He had nothing left. His tank was empty. His heart was drained. His arms were heavy, but he was still trying to win. That's the first time in his career where he's not won a round that he's actually tried to win. And I've got to say, exposed is probably the right word. That might just be a little bit strong, and I'll tell you why I say that. I say that because the risk, and you mentioned that word, it was a massive risk. It was brave. And I've got to tell you, on paper, it was foolish what Fury did. But he got so close. He was so close from the very first round. He was probably 6 inches closer. And I'll tell you for why. Because the very first punch Fury lands in a heavyweight championship fight against the guy who's 6'7" with very long levers, is Fury lands a long left hook. So it's not a jab. It's not a quite a short left hook. It's a left hook. Now, to land that punch, you've got to be really close. So I think Fury started that fight 6 inches closer, and that forced and pushed Wilder back constantly. But, you know, you talk about Wilder in some ways being exposed, and as much as I disagree with the sacking of Mark Breland, his corner was not very impressive. That's a fact.
Yeah, I'm with you there, although I'm not sure he could have done what he would have needed to do to save himself in that fight, Steve. I'm just not sure he's got what it as a, you know, again, technically in terms of as a boxer, I'm not sure he would have been able to deal with what was coming at him. Maybe there was a way.
And you're probably right, but he didn't try anything other than going back using his enormous gonads and his giant heart. Now that was his fight tactic: be as brave as possible until there's blood coming out my nose, mouth, and ears. And hopefully the referee or the towel on Fury's punches will end the fight. That's not tactics. That's just stupidity.
Steve, in this third fight coming up, you know Tyson Fury very well. What would you expect him to do tactically now? Because both you and Mr. Brunt have said he won this fight taking a risk. What would you expect him to do in that third fight?
Well, you know what this guy Fury does? He switches things around. You know, we expect one thing and he delivers something else. So the obvious thing for me to say is he'll do the same thing. Go over the front foot, push Wilder back and get a stoppage. He might just be slightly more cautious in the next fight, knowing that after two or three rounds, then Wilder will start to tire, knowing that Wilder will start to get desperate. I don't actually expect to see Fury as aggressive in the opening round of the third fight as he was in the second fight, because he needed to make a statement at the MGM on Saturday night. He needed to get straight out there and get in Wilder's face. He doesn't necessarily need to do that in the third fight. He just needs to win.
Steve, you know, I was talking to Jeff earlier in the show here. You know, the first time I saw Tyson Fury in person, he fought up here in Canada.
I remember, on
an undercard, right? And early in his career, and I remember saying, and I had no idea what to make of this guy. You know, he's huge. Mm-hmm. He was kind of slippery and elusive in the ring. Didn't look like a huge banger at that point, considering how big he was. You know, he was an odd looking fighter. And at what point did you start to believe that he could become what he's become?
Around the same sort of time as those excursions, Mick Hennessy's promoter at the time did quite a bit of business in Canada, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And it was quite early in his career. And what we were looking for, what I was looking for at 20 and 21, so 10 years ago, was I was looking for him to develop slightly. And what we didn't know then was how good his chin is or isn't. But certainly 10 years ago, we knew that if he could stay clean, which he didn't, he could develop into a decent fighter. But I'm not gonna claim that when I saw him when he was 15, 16, 17, I thought one day that guy will rule the world and make money that's just, you know, unimaginable to most people. You know, I fancied he'd have a good run by about now, the age of 30. But even 5 years ago, I still thought perhaps the lack of aggression sometimes, the lack of power would hold him back. But then we've seen him box brilliantly in the first Wilder fight, which I think he won clearly.
Me too.
And then we've seen him fight on Saturday in a marauding style. You know, he was like a 6'9" Sonny Liston the other day. I loved every second of it.
What do you think? So, you know, the other fight's Anthony Joshua. And obviously we're you know, at home, that would be an unbelievable event. I'm not sure if I want that fight if I'm Anthony Joshua right now, but I think you'd take Anthony Joshua to school. But what? How big is the demand for that fight? And you know how likely is that to happen?
Well, I think it's going to happen. But if now that this has been triggered, it's not going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen this year. And that means Joshua has to fight Kubrat Pulev. And I've just made an awful lot of Canadians go, ooh.
Yes.
Kubrat Pulev from Bulgaria. Household name in various places in Bulgaria. He's a good, solid heavyweight. But he's a good, solid heavyweight. But that's a tricky sell compared to what we just witnessed at the weekend. I think it has to happen, but they're on rival TV channels. That's been overcome a time in boxing history. And they're on promoted by promoters who are bitter rivals. So as much as Joshua says, I want it, and as much as Tyson Fury says, I'll take it, there's an awful lot that can happen in the middle. And they can make vast sums by not fighting each other.
True.
Let's get that established. They've both made already in their careers vast sums. Fury is going to get 60% of another giant gate, probably walked away with as much as $50 million for the third fight. And Joshua himself will fight Pulev and probably clear a bit less than that, but not much, probably $35 million. You know, I'm using US dollars. It's kind of simple. So they're both making vast sums. The British public would want it. They are demanding it. They do need it. But I can assure you, the 90,000 people that would buy tickets that would sell out Wembley in about 30 seconds, they've got no real say. We're dealing here with global issues and boxing international issues, and the screams and the hollers and the desires of the fans. I've got to tell you this. I don't want to upset people. They do take second place.
If that fight happened in the next year, what do you think it would look like, Steve?
Oh, that's interesting, because in the last Joshua fight, you remember that rumble out in Saudi Arabia?
Yes.
Where he did a Tyson Fury. He turned everything on its head and boxed like we've never seen him box before. You know, very carefully, never let his right hand away from his chin, protected himself at all times and won every second of all 12 rounds against a vastly overweight and, in fact, grossly underprepared Andy Ruiz. That Anthony Joshua, believe it or not, that's a problem for Tyson Fury, a guy that doesn't commit, a guy not prepared to take risks, because that makes Tyson Fury then have to force and chase the fight. And that was fine against Deontay Wilder, who didn't have a clue when he was backed up. But Anthony Joshua is a smarter cookie. He's a smarter fighter than people give him credit for. Don't be fooled by his physique. Inside his head, he's a smart boxer. And that Anthony Joshua, the Ruiz Joshua, that's an interesting fight, my friend. That's not a walkover for Tyson Fury.
No, not a, it would be fascinating. Look, I just, you know, when you see a guy get knocked out the way Joshua got knocked out by Ruiz, you know, and again, maybe that was a fluke, maybe one night only. You know, and it helps, you know, it helped him that Ruiz showed up, as you said, grossly overweight and grossly underprepared. It was awful.
Terrible.
But I just wonder, you know, if you get hit like that and you get knocked out like that, it's hard to shake, man. And I'm not sure how many fighters can shake that kind of, and you know, which would mean a, you know, an aggressive Tyson Fury coming right at him. I wonder how Anthony Joshua deals with that.
Well, the good was two things. First of all, you're right, not many fighters can overcome that. But of course, we both share a fighter. Lennox, I'm both
yes,
British,
sir.
Canadian Lewis, my
did,
friend.
Did it twice.
And don't start claiming him as a full-on Canadian, okay? He's at least 50.1% British before you guys start getting on your high horse.
Well, there was that Olympic medal. They didn't play God Save the Queen in Korea, though, when he won the gold medals, I recall.
They did not, but the Koreans, they haven't got an ear for music, okay? So it's as simple as that. Lennox told me personally he was disappointed when he heard the other anthem. No, I'm only kidding. No, listen, neither here nor there. Lennox could do it twice. And he did it in two fights, remember, that were, and we maybe forget, they were as big a shock as the Ruiz night.
Absolutely,
you know, when he got done by Rackman and when he got done by Oliver McCall in London, those were stunners. I mean, genuine stunners. Lennox came back, but then Lennox is Lennox, man. And we're only starting to really appreciate Lennox the longer he's away from the ring. You know that, don't you?
That's true.
I mean, we've all loved him. But suddenly, 10, 15 years after defeat, especially when he's wandering around in Las Vegas, you know, people are looking at him in awe. He wanders around like he's regal, you know, genuinely regal. Now, the other point is, Anthony Joshua has absolutely no fear of Tyson Fury. None at all. He is convinced he can beat him. But you're right about carrying wounds, and that was part of the reason why Joshua boxed the way he did in the rematch with Ruiz. But what I'm trying to say is there's a subtle plot here. There's a subtle subplot, excuse me. And that is that Anthony Joshua fully, totally, and 100% altered anything we've ever seen from Anthony Joshua before. And anybody that can put into practice 12 three-minute rounds of something like that, as serious as that, and stick to a plan like that, he is a heavyweight you have to respect.
Steve, it was great of you to join us. Thanks so much. Terrific insight.
Are we done? I thought we were doing 6 hours.
Oh, we can do more. Brent, you got another question.
Yeah,
go
ahead. We could keep going, Steve. Hey, man.
Quick one. Great. Hey, listen, fellas, it's been a delight talking to you.
Yeah, great. Yeah. It's a blast talking to you. We will do this again, okay, my friend?
Yeah, thanks, fellas. Enjoy yourself, and I'll see you soon, I hope.